Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fly in the Lab. My name is Maria, and I am a scientist, PhD student, science communicator, and host of this podcast. Fly in the Lab is a place where we can all chat and laugh about our science confessions or lab mishaps. This podcast is a place where we can dispel myths about scientists and really share some of the humour that gets us through the day-to-day struggles, of which there are many. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope that you enjoy listening to Fly in the Lab. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Fly in the Lab. It is me, Maria, and it has been an interesting week this week, to be honest. I think I spoke last week about how I have been kind of getting into some new experiments at work in the lab, and it's been, I was just saying in this episode with the two lovely ladies that I will introduce very shortly, I was just saying how there has been a lot of residual stress. I feel like this week kind of in the background just going on constantly, which has been a bit unusual for me because I am normally pretty good at just switching off, and you know, I'm pretty well accustomed to just doing the hours that I need to do in the lab, and then I come home and I'm good at just switching off, kind of having the evening to myself. But I feel like recently I've been really struggling to do that. And I think a lot of that is down to this kind of being my final year. And I'm just feeling the pressure a little bit to kind of get some results and get everything kind of written up. So yeah, I'm feeling a little bit stressed out. But, you know, it is something that I expected. You know, PhDs, if you don't know, are normally funded for kind of 3 to 4 years, especially in the UK. And my funding is only for 3 years, and I'm in the final year now of my funding. So I'm a third year PhD student. And yeah, I'm just kind of feeling the pressure a little bit to get everything finished off. And I'm doing the biggest experiment at the minute of my PhD. And I just really feel like I need to nail it and get the results that I want. And as it stands, I'm getting some strange results that I didn't expect. And it's kind of just throwing me off a little bit. And I don't know, I feel like I'm putting a lot of like invisible pressure on myself to get it done. And I kind of want to get it done before Christmas so that I can kind of start with the next experiment, which is going to be kind of the next chapter of my thesis. So as part of a PhD, you have to write almost like a big book about all of the experiments that you've done throughout your 3 years. And you normally split that up into chapters based on kind of like experiments or different hypotheses, so like what you're predicting you're going to see. And as it stands, I think I'm going to split mine up based on the experiments that I'm doing. So I kind of want to start that. So I feel like I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself. I'm really feeling it at the minute. But you know, it's okay. It's all part of the process. And I know that, well, I hope that I'll eventually get through it and it will all be okay. We'll see. But it's been really nice to record the podcast this week to kind of break everything up. And I had the pleasure of speaking to the ladies at the Academinist podcast. So if you're not already aware of the Academinist podcast, it is a podcast where Jodie and Rebecca, the hosts, speak to various different women in STEM about their careers, their journeys into STEM. And honestly, it's a brilliant podcast that I myself have actually featured on. So if you'd like to check that out, that would be really cool, not only for me, but for them. And Jodie and Rebecca are two absolutely lovely, lovely girls. And I was really excited to speak to them because, as I said in the podcast, I just knew that we'd be able to have a really good chat and just really set the world to rights. And I was right. It was a really good recording. So I really hope you enjoy this recording of The Fly in the Lab. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'd like to welcome the lovely ladies from the Academinist podcast who are with us today. So we have Jodie and Rebecca. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, everyone. So I am half of the Academinist. I'm Rebecca. I'm a final year PhD student at the Maurice Wall Clinical Neuroscience Institute, which is at King's College London. And yeah, so I work on, spoiler alert, Jodie and I work in the same lab. So we work on fairly similar stuff. We both work on a novel mechanism of how neurons die in neurodegenerative disease. And I particularly focus on motor neuron disease and frontotemporal dementia caused by a specific mutation in a gene called C9orf72. And so, yeah, I work with a bit of everything, a bit of flies, cell culture, human brain tissue, to basically understand how neurons die in this disease. So that's me.
Brilliant. You're like a jack of all trades. I didn't realize that you kind of cover a few different model organisms and what have you. So that's really cool. So I should mention it, Rebecca is a final year PhD student now. So you have a year left to go. How long do you have to go?
I feel like I should know better than I do. I just know that I have, basically my funding runs out December next year, but I figure I should probably be done before then. So not quite like a panic time yet.
Love that.
Definitely in like, the end stages.
Oh, but also what Rebecca doesn't know is that she's never going to leave because I'm going to tie her to her desk. I don't want to live in a lab where Rebecca does not exist. So.
That's the thing about science really, isn't it? There's so many people always coming and going because you have people who are on like short contracts, you have, you know, PhD students starting all the time, and it really like upsets the apple cart a little bit when somebody leaves. And I think especially, you know, you two seem to get on really well. I can imagine that is going to be really strange if Rebecca eventually moves on.
it'll be weird. Haven't thought that far ahead yet though, so.
let's not worry about it now. No, this is supposed to be a happy podcast, so we're not gonna talk about the stressful stuff. And Jodie, do you want to introduce yourself?
So I'm Jodie, I'm the other half of the Academinist, some would argue the better half.
Oh no, we're off to this start already.
See, I wondered when you were saying all that nice stuff earlier, I was like, who is this?
Something's brewing.
There she is.
So I am also a PhD student. I'm in the same lab as Rebecca at King's College London. So we do study similar things. So we look at the similar cell death mechanism, but I'm more interested in how that communicates with microglia and the effects on neuroinflammation. So I'm looking at more neuroinflammatory Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and things like that. So and then also I'm Not Brain Science on Instagram, so I'm quite big into science communication and doing the kind of funny reels and making a bit of a tit of myself, to be honest. So that's what I like to do in my spare time when I'm not doing science. But I also work across work with flies and also ex vivo and in vitro cell models and things like that. So it's good to do multiple different things, because I think that if I was working with just the one thing every day, I would probably get a little bit bored. But that's one good thing about our lab, that we tend to work across lots of different things.
Yeah, that is really good. I should say, Jodie is potentially, and please don't take any disrespect from this, Rebecca, but Jodie is potentially the busiest person that I know.
I feel like... Oh no, totally. I totally agree. Like, we do all the podcast stuff and then like lab stuff, and then I'll see her like scheduling all of her Instagram stuff, and I'm just like, you must have a time machine somewhere. I'm convinced you have one.
I don't understand it. I'm like, you are so busy, and you're like smashing everything, you're writing books and winning awards, and I'm just like, damn girl, take a break.
Making the rest of us look bad.
Harry Potter when Hermione's got that
time turner or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. When you're talking about sort of making silly reels and stuff, that's sort of, it segments me very nicely into the poll of the week, so I'm glad that you brought that up. And I have selected this one for mainly for Jodie, but I'm sure Rebecca you'll be able to relate to this. And the reason why I've picked this is because Jodie, sort of, you went like viral because of a reel that you did about breaking, or at least the fear of breaking, a centrifuge. So the poll of the week is, have you ever broken something in the lab and not confessed to it? So do you both want to have a guess of kind of which way this swayed? So it's a yes or a no.
Ooh, I think it definitely goes more towards yes. But I guess it depends on like how expensive the kit is, right? Would people own up if it was something really small?
Yeah, so this is what I was kind of thinking. Because I was thinking, if it's like a beaker,
yeah, exactly.
But then equally, if it's like a £2 million piece of kit, do you really want to cough it? I'm not so sure.
I think it's going to swing towards no. I think
devil's advocate,
will lie.
I must admit, I asked people to be kind of as truthful as possible, but I have a feeling some people maybe think that I'm going to judge them. I'm not really sure. It's very close, I'll tell you that. So 58% said yes, and 42% said no. So a pretty even 50-50 split, swing slightly more in the yes. And I did message a couple of people who replied yes and sort of said, oh, would you mind telling me what it was that you broke? And a lot of it was just kind of like, oh, like glassware, or, you know, I broke like an incubator, or I broke a fridge. Like it wasn't anything like too major, but I must admit, if it was something like a centrifugation, you know, if anybody's listened to this who hasn't used a centrifuge before, I feel like centrifuges make the scariest sound when they're just working properly. And every time I use one, I'm just like, it's going to break, it's going to break. And I feel like my confession of the week, so I'm going to go first this week, is that I did in fact break a centrifuge once. So it was during my master's year, and it was one of the really small ones, like the micro centrifuges. And to this day, I don't know what I did wrong. I balanced it nicely. I didn't overfill it. I put the top on, you know, I tied it on really well. And I made sure it was all nice and tight. And as soon as I set it off, it started making that noise where it was just sort of like, and I was like, no. And everybody in the lab just sort of turned and looked at me, and I was absolutely mortified, because obviously you can't switch it off because that would probably break it more. And it just kept making this really like high pitched squeal, but also low pitched growl, for what felt like an hour, but was probably more like a minute and 30 seconds. I did in fact break it. Nobody could get the lid off. And when they did get the lid off, everything, like all the bits inside, had all like just sort of like flown off. And I don't know what I did. I still don't know what I did. And like, I think about it every time I use a centrifuge now. I sort of like, I say like a little prayer to like the science gods for it just not to happen again, because I don't think I could go through the embarrassment again. It was just not the one.
I feel like it's always worse when there's people there to witness it as well, because yeah. I feel like at least if something breaks, you've got time to think, should I confess?
yeah it's always that thing of like,
someone's there.
If nobody had been there, I'll be honest, I'm not sure if I would have just like upped and left it, and maybe like gone and got somebody being like, oh, I walked in and it seemed to be making a funny noise, like.
No, that's like, so I work with the ultra centrifuge, so they're the big like boys. The Beckman, the ones that's, you know, freestanding, yeah, the big boys. And the first couple of times I used it, I was so terrified. I must have balanced the liquids, I don't know, like 3-4 times, so like double check that everything was balanced. And then I was standing in the doorway with like the door open, 1 foot out of the room, ready to leg it just in case.
When you said in the doorway, I was picturing you like doing an earthquake, like bracing in the doorway.
And like, I still now, when I run the 100,000 run, I literally stand there half out of the room, sort of waiting for it to hit speed, and if it doesn't, I'm just like, I'm ready to leg it so that I don't get hit by this massive machine. But the first or second time that I used it, I did actually, I didn't quite break the whole machine, but the buckets that your centrifuge tubes sit in, basically one of the tubes exploded and was stuck inside the bucket, and we only have one set of buckets per rotor, so these were the only ones that were that size, so nobody else could use it for the rest of the week until we managed to prize it out. And I actually told, I hope the lab technicians don't listen to this, I actually told the lab technician that I'm not sure what happened, maybe there was a bit of liquid on the outside of the tube and that's how it's kind of like suctioned, I don't know, but I actually know what happened, and it was entirely my fault.
Oh no.
So basically I just underfilled the tube. They hold like 38 mils. And if you obviously only fill them up a certain way, then the top just collapses in. And stupidly, I normally top it up with PBS, so it's culture media. And I didn't this time. I was in such a kind of like, oh, I need to get it balanced, blah, blah, blah. And then it wasn't until obviously I went to open it that I realized, oh yeah, I tried to put 17 mil in a 38 mil tube. That's why it probably collapsed in on itself. But I was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe there was some liquid on the back of the tube. I have no clue.
I love the bravado, just like, I don't know what happened. Like,
needless to say, I haven't had the issue since. So
you must have the best poker face. I feel like it's always just written plain across my face. Like, if something goes wrong, I'm like white, lip trembling, like straight away.
Yeah, no, I was more like sassy, like, this is such an inconvenience to me. I lost my samples.
Like, almost like it's their fault that this has happened.
Like, for God's sake, no. So, you know, they
How dare you not have retrieved it.
You know, the equipment's fine. Nothing was broken or hurt. So, yeah, I feel like I could confess that to you.
Definitely. That's a good one. Thank you for sharing that. You know, that I feel like that's a bold one to confess. Oh, although I do hope that they're not listening to this. If they are, on behalf of me, I'm sorry. Rebecca, have you got any sort of confessions either related to that or completely failed? So, you can go off on one.
Mine aren't really centrifuge related, although that did nearly happen to me. I was using like a massive one of the massive freestanding centrifuges to spin down like basically 500 mils of like stinky bacteria liquid to get my cell pellet at the bottom, which is like, you don't want that going anywhere. And I sort of set it up and I balanced it and everything, and I was watching it, and like it got past the like speed bit and I was like, okay, cool, I can go and leave this. And then I came back sort of 5 minutes later to check on it, sort of walking down the corridor, and like I could see one of the technicians at the other end, and I was just like, oh no. Like, it's not even like I can't even just walk away and pretend it's not me at that point, because I'm just walking along like clearly coming to get my stuff. And I almost had the same thing that happened to Jodie, but luckily they heard it and stopped it when they were walking past. So I got off lightly, but I couldn't really like walk away and pretend it wasn't me.
Oh well, at least like, you know, that, I mean, Jodie, at least you know that it's, you know, it's a mistake that's maybe easily made. I don't know if that makes you feel any better.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not one that I'll make again. Like, after it happened, it made so much sense why it had happened, so it felt like a really stupid mistake.
Yeah, but you've got to make these mistakes, haven't you, to learn. It's all part of the process.
I keep telling myself that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say mine wasn't really so much weirdly, I was thinking about this before this podcast, and a lot of mine are kind of worryingly fume hood related things, and I'm just like, this really does not, I don't know, it's not, no, it's honestly, it's not that bad. So I was doing a lot of cloning work with bacteria, and so for that you need to use like a little Bunsen burner to basically keep the work area sterile. And so in our lab we have these little, like the little gas camping stoves, it's literally that, and with like the little blue gas canisters instead of actual Bunsen burners.
It's very scientific.
Do the same job, you know. But basically one of those had run out, and I was like, okay, I need to change the canister. And like, our lab has like a bit of a hoarding problem, where we've got some kit that's like super old. I say our lab, it's RPI, not us.
throw them under the, like, bus, why don't,
which,
you?
No, to be fair, it's like good not to waste stuff. But there's like, I found this like stack of pretty old like gas canisters. And they weren't like the variety where it's just like you open it, stick your thing in, screw it in, it's fine. It was the old kind where like you have to literally take the like gas bit off the top and literally stab it into the canister, and like you have to make a clean like hole in the canister, otherwise the gas is only going to go everywhere. And I'd sort of mentioned to our PI, I'd said, oh, do you know where I can find like new canisters and stuff? And he said, oh yeah, they're here. Make sure you do it under the fume hood. I was like, okay, like I probably would have done that anyway, but yeah, so I did that. And obviously I messed it up, because I like stabbed the thing in and like I could hear gas coming out, and I was just like, oh, oh God. And yeah, and there wasn't really anyone else around, so I was just like, okay. And like, basically, I think I did probably the most sensible thing. I just left it in the fume hood, pulled the thing down, made sure the fume hood was like on, because like it was safe, the gas wasn't going to go anywhere. And I think I knew that, and I knew it was the most sensible thing to do. And then I went home, because like it was quite late and no one else was around, and I went home and I was just like, oh God. Like I was literally imagining coming back to work the next day and just finding a crater where the lab was. And like, I knew that was not going to happen, but I did not sleep very well that night. I was just like, oh, it's all my fault.
I feel like in the face of kind of like danger there, though, you were pretty level headed. I feel like that wouldn't have been where my mind would have gone. Although I don't know, I guess if you're trained in that, maybe you would just instinctively do that. I don't know, but I feel like hats off to you for dealing with that situation like you did. You know, not ideal, but you dealt with it pretty well.
I mean, I literally haven't told anyone that, and I was actually trying to like gauge Jodie's face while I was saying this. Like before we started recording, I was like, oh god, am I going to be that person who goes too far beyond like vanilla confessions and being like, oh no, I'm actually incompetent. Or a danger to society.
When you were saying, you know, you were struggling to sleep and you were worried there was going to be a crater, like my mind went to, I'm hoping there's not going to be any like people like who've got to check on it and have like passed out, like that was where my mind went.
Well, this is why it was kind of lucky that no one, like I knew no one was really going to be around, so like it, like no one, it wasn't going to affect anyone really, and I'd like sealed it off, so I was like, okay, I think this
is funny
fine.
You should say that, Rebecca, because that actually reminds me of a time in the lab when I went to the fume hood and I opened it up, and then I just remember waking up several hours later.
It all makes sense now.
Oh, don't.
Oh, bless you.
I am
you.
Joking.
I know.
No, that's a good one. Thank you for sharing that.
I literally left the building like I was leaving a crime scene, like sweating.
Hood up. Dark glasses on. Like, if this is my last day here, it's been good. It's been great.
It's that same feeling, isn't it? When you like walk into a shop and they don't have what you want to buy, so you leave the shop without buying anything, but you feel like the security guard's looking at you as if to be like, what are you up to? So you have to be overly like, like imagine you going past the security guards on the way out, Rebecca, like everything's fine here.
Don't look upstairs.
Oh no. Oh, have you got anything else that you'd like to confess, Jordy?
Well, I was talking to Rebecca earlier actually, and I was like, I feel like I haven't really got any, you know, wild stories. I said, I think the most wild thing I've got probably is that I sometimes use your pee to prepare. And she was like, what? Oh. She was like, excuse you?
For anybody listening to the podcast who isn't a scientist, when you have a pipette, it's kind of like, how can I kind of put this? Oh, it's like somebody else using your toothbrush. It's just not something that you do. It's a very, you have your set of pipettes, you use them. And I think it's normally, I think like I'm normally fine if other PhD students who I like trust use them. But if it's like, I don't know, maybe like an undergraduate student or somebody who I maybe don't know as well, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll watch you use it first and just make sure that you're using it properly to make sure it doesn't break, because pipettes are quite expensive. So I just bought a pipette the other day and it was like, I don't know, £140. So you don't really want anybody and everybody using it. But oh, I can imagine my jaw would have hit the floor as well, to be honest.
Yeah, she was like, what? And she was like, audacity. I might have to hide it now. And I was like, please don't. My lowest pipette is a P20. I need it. So yeah, I mean, other than borrowing people's equipment, I always put it back and replace it. So, you know, I don't think that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I didn't know this was happening till now. So
see? When you go in tomorrow, Jordy, and like everything's been moved, and you're like, oh, that's sad. Interesting.
Yeah.
You know why?
Rebecca, I was meant to tell you this. So this is not so much a confession, I guess, but it's kind of embarrassing. Okay. And I've been umming and ahhing about releasing the footage or not on my Instagram.
Ooh.
Because I watch it every now and then and I find it hilarious. If you've seen my Instagram, you'll see that I record stuff in the lab, usually a reel, me dancing or doing something. And this one time I was recording myself doing a reel, and Rebecca actually walked into the lab and said hello to me. And so I've got this video of me going na 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 na, and then you can hear Rebecca go, morning, and then I go, oh, hi. And then you see me just watch until you hear the door close, and then I go, da, da, da.
Oh no.
And So many times where I've been recording something, I get so embarrassed. Like, I do it in the lab, but nobody can be there. And no, like,
yeah, I'm exactly the same. It's very much a case of like, yeah,
you've got it. Freeze up, don't you?
Yeah, you do. I have to make sure that I do it on like either a really quiet day, and it's either like first thing in the morning, or it's like quite late in the afternoon or the evening. So I know that there's not as many people knocking about, but nobody's caught me yet, touch wood. But I must admit, there's been some close calls where somebody's walked into the lab and I've had to like really quickly grab my phone and be like, nothing to see here.
Just like casually leaning on the lab.
Yeah, I 100% wasn't just like dancing, trying to create some sort of informative science reel.
But yeah, I'll show you the video, but I'm literally like dancing 1 minute and then I'm like, oh yeah, hey, good morning, yeah. And then I'm just watching you leave and then you hear the door close and then I'm like, okay, let's turn this off.
If you do release that, you'll have to let me know and I'll have to share it like on the Fly in the Lab Instagram as well, so that if anybody listens to this, they can like,
it's hard living a double life. Well. Oh,
it's so hard being famous. Okay, so I feel like we should start with the first confession. I'm going to start with a one that is, so I've got two for us, and I'm going to start with one about flies. So, you know, I figured we've all worked or are working in a fly lab or fly related lab. So I feel like this will resonate with you. So I work in a fly lab. I once accidentally threw out the wrong stock and only realised when my PI asked for it. I quickly grabbed another stock that had the similar phenotypes and relabeled it. My PI noticed, and I'm ashamed to say I blamed it on our summer placement student that had just left. I said that they must have got the stocks mixed up whilst they did the transfers. All's well that ends well, because we just reordered the stock. But I don't think my PI ever suspected it was actually me, and I never confessed to it.
Oh my God.
Your faces throughout that was amazing.
The plot twist.
Oh my God.
And I always thought the fly community was like wholesome and lovely.
I did. I was like letting the side down.
Oh my, I think the worst bit about that is blaming it on the poor summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I messaged the person who sent this one in and I was like, can I just ask like how had they left? Like how long ago had they left? And they were like, it was sort of like a period of months ago. So it wasn't kind of like a matter of like days or anything like that. But my mind kind of went to, well, what if they like want a reference or something like that? Like, I guess the PI would assume that it was an accident. Because, well, I don't know, it's not ideal.
Yeah. I think, like, if it was, like, they were still writing their thesis and it could impact on their competency or something like that, then that's quite bad. But, yeah, if it was several months ago, then I assume that the supervisor would still... You can't give a bad reference, first of all. You're not legally... I don't know if it's about other countries, but in the UK anyway, you can't give a bad reference. The least that PI would be able to do is, yes, I can confirm that student A spent a period of 2 months in my lab. So I think like it wouldn't necessarily have a detrimental effect on the student. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that way, it's kind of like a victimless crime.
Is it, Jodie? Like... Is it?
Think of the flies.
But at the same time, like, literally, well, you saw our faces when you were reading that out, like, oh my God. I don't know what I would do if I chucked out the wrong stock. I don't think I'd cover it up or anything, just in case.
You'd have to cuff it up
and then it affected, you know, the previous data or anything like that. But I probably would blame it on a student, you know.
Oh, controversial. I didn't think you would say that.
I feel like, yeah, maybe I would. I don't know. Who knows?
Would you do it if they were literally there in the lab? Would you be like, oh,
it was them. Pointed me on their back. Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, never say never.
Oh my God.
Oh, that poor student. But yeah, that's a good one, that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of on the same, not the same mind as you, because I don't think I would blame on a student, but I don't know what I would do, because I think, yeah, if your PI wanted it and you realized that you'd made that mistake, yeah, it's awful. But then at the same time, you're right, you can't give them flies that are the wrong genotype, because yeah, it's going to affect the results.
Oh yeah, that's another thing. They found flies that had the same phenotype. We're like, but not them.
That bit I wouldn't do. Layer
of deception. Oh
yeah,
my God.
That bit I wouldn't do. Just in case the PI hadn't picked up on it and had used it in the experiment and then had trusted the results. Like, I think that I wouldn't have done that. But I think maybe I would have blamed it on someone.
If that gets published, you're taking that to the grave.
That's like two levels, two lives. Oh my God.
It's really, I feel like
web of lies.
But it is though, really, because at some point you would have to cough it. You couldn't just let that slide, because you're right. If it did get published, that's there forever. That's not ever coming down. And, you know, especially if, you know, you want a career in science, that's not something that you really want hanging over you. But equally, like, if you then did it and then had to confess to the PI that you'd done it, that's gonna really like ruin your relationship with them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like I don't understand the first bit, but I can see why that person blamed it on the student in that scenario, especially because it was like retrospect. Like, if it was like the student was still there and then it was like one of you had to take the rap, I think that's different. But I think if it's kind of like they tried to cover it up, that didn't work, and then in a moment of panic you thought, I'm gonna blame the person who it doesn't necessarily impact anymore, I kind of get that.
that is a good point. I think I think especially it depends what sort of relationship you have with your supervisor, because if you have a bit of maybe a precarious relationship with them, you're not really going to want to maybe admit that you've made a mistake. And I could totally understand that. I mean, I personally would confess it, but then I have a good relationship with my PI where I know that she wouldn't like shout at me if I did something like that. And at the end of the day, it's just a mistake. I mean, I don't know if, like, do you have the same supervisor, you two, or?
Yeah, we do.
And like, do you get on with them? Can I ask you that?
I think we do. He's a very nice guy. He's a very nice guy. He's a good supervisor. He can be a bit strange. sometimes it's like about trying to gauge him or like understand his reaction to things can be a bit like difficult. So socially, like interaction wise, can be a bit strange. Yeah, so he's a good supervisor, but yeah, some interactions leave you a little bit confused, basically.
As is the way with many scientists.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like he definitely falls into the eccentric scientist sort of area.
Yeah, but then so you are part of kind of quite a big lab where I'm just like a one person team, like there's just me and my supervisor. So do you have like a lot of people who work on the same sets of flies? Like, would a mistake like that be picked up a lot quicker than maybe it would be if it was just me on my own?
So when I joined the lab, it was literally just the supervisor and then two PhD students, and then I was a research assistant. Now we're basically doubled. There's quite a lot of us now. But especially, so we have like central stocks, that these like five trays that are used by everybody. And so I think if one of those was contaminated, then that could affect everybody's work. And then we all individually have our own set of like project flies as well. So people do have their own copies of things. So I think, if it was something that was only going to affect your work and you knew about it, then I guess that's different to it being a contamination of the central stock and then affecting like five projects.
Yeah, because that's something that I hadn't thought about until kind of just now. Is it just affecting you, or is it going to affect, you know, a big lab group? Because I do think that changes the situation, because you'd have to cough it.
Especially if it's like you're working in a lab group that maybe they're like known for working on this protein or this disease like protein or something, and then suddenly maybe like a result or something that they know about that protein that's always been seen, suddenly it's not happening because it's not the same flies, you'd just be like, something is off here.
Oh, but it is.
Oh my God, can you imagine them just sitting quiet in the lab meetings? Like, they're like, I've tried doing this, I've tried doing that, and it's just not working. And they're just sat there like, if you tried, like completely like ignoring the fact that they know that they're not the right flies.
But no, I think that was a good one. I'm pleased that like you both reacted as I did, you know?
Yeah, that was a juicy one.
What if you thought that was juicy?
Oh my God.
So, confession number two. So this is a little bit left field. This isn't kind of too lab related, but we'll go with it anyway. So this is sort of a confession, sort of a what would you do in my scenario type question. I'm a postdoc now, so I feel like I can share this story from my PhD without too much trouble. I worked in a lab with two supervisors who were married. Let's call them Jill and Bob. I thought that Jill and Bob had the perfect situation, an amazing lab group and such a cute couple too. I was having a meal with my boyfriend for our anniversary when he went to the toilet as we were waiting for the bill to arrive. I glanced around and noticed Bob sat at another table, but not with Jill, with a postdoc from another lab. They looked very cozy, holding hands and deep in conversation. I never told Bob or Jill what I saw because I was worried how it would affect my PhD. And to my knowledge, they're still married. I guess my question is, would you have said something? Yeah, my response was,
so much to unpack.
Okay, I have a problem
with like, I know people think it's cute sometimes where like PIs like working together, like in the same field and stuff, or like people who've met because like someone was a postdoc in their lab, and it's always the way around where it's like male supervisor, female postdoc, right?
Yeah.
There's so much power imbalance there. I'm just like,
it's like eating where you work type situation. Yeah. And I'm just like, icky. No, I don't know.
I say you shouldn't dip your nib in the office ink.
If that's not a title, that's going to have to be the title of this podcast. This particular episode. That's amazing.
Oh my God. Never dip your nib in the office ink.
This does kind of like, you know, just to play like devil's advocate a little bit, you know, you do have to think about it in a case where like, yeah, it might be amazing. You might be like a dream team, but what happens if that dream team one day does happen to collapse and you have to have like a divorce? What then happens to the lab group? Like, do you still have to work together? Do you have to like split off? Like, it's a bit of a nightmare to sort that out, you know?
It's like, imagine going through a breakup, which is like a big thing anyway, and it affecting not only your life but also your work and your career. Like, imagine going for a breakup and it literally affects every single part of your life. I think mixing the two is, you know,
especially if you especially if you've broken up with someone who is like, say maybe you're not quite equals and one of you is slightly higher up, and you're sort of like, oh, I've just broken up with the person who is kind of responsible for me getting a salary, you know, and things like that, and like your career, especially because like in science, like reputation and like people saying like good things about you and your work is kind of how you get by. It's just I don't know, like I know some people think it's really cute, like this whole like academic science couple thing. I'm just like, I think like if you're two like in the same lab and like even in the same field, or like, I'm just a bit like, I don't know. It's not for me.
Yeah. My mind always kind of goes to just like, well, I don't know if it's just me being like a bit of a pessimistic when it comes to this sort of thing, but it's a case of like the, what if you break up, and then how are you going to kind of navigate still working together afterwards?
I mean, we've spoke about the kind of like not eating where you shit or shit where you eat or whatever. let's
that wasn't even the main thing.
Can we not ignore the fact that Jill was not sat with Bob? Like, where was Jill? I'm angry for Jill.
Justice for Jill.
I mean, I don't know, because I I'm really against sort of like infidelity, cheating, things like that. So I think as like a woman supporting women and all that, if a friend of mine, I knew that she was being cheated on, I would tell her. And if the same as if a guy messaged me and I knew that he had a girlfriend or a wife or whatever, I would message that woman and say, look, you don't know me, but your partner's been messaging me. I just thought you should know. So that's the kind of person that I am. Having said that, if it was my boss cheating on my other boss, I'm not sure that I would get involved, because I don't know. I think there's certain things that it's kind of like they probably wouldn't react well to it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't want to get into that. I don't want it to become a love triangle and I'm part of it, you know?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I think as well, again, to play kind of like devil's advocate, is I guess you don't know what the relationship is between this like postdoc and this PI. Like, I don't know from what they've kind of said whether they like know this other postdoc quite well. But if it's just somebody who they maybe know of, I guess you don't know, are they like related? Is it like a niece? Or, you know, I mean, I realise that it sounds very far-fetched. I'm seeing your face as grimacing.
No, I was going to ask you, actually. But I was going to ask you, like, did they know what kind of vibe was going on with this dinner?
Let me have a look at it again. So they didn't really say, like, what I read was kind of all of the information that I got from them. So they're saying they glanced around, noticed Bob sat at another table with the postdoc from another lab. They looked very, very, as in capital letters, very cosy, holding hands and deep in conversation.
Oh, okay.
I guess it's the holding hands bit for me. Jodie's face. Yeah. I really want, for the sake of Jill and Bob, I really want to hope that this is like not as it seems, but I feel like it's being insinuated that it is in fact as it seems.
Yeah. I mean, they're not discussing data.
No.
I mean, no.
Your P value was really promising.
God.
This is supposed to be rude, by the way, girls. You're very dirty. Yeah, no. I'm not sure I'd get involved. Hang on. So let's play devil's advocate a little bit. Let's say Jill knows about the postdoc.
Oh.
Jill's turning a blind eye. You bring it up to Jill, and now she doesn't like the fact that you know that she knows.
Yeah, that is a good point, because like you don't want to be poking about too much, because I'm always quite careful. Mm-hmm. I think especially when talking to, you know, like PIs or like lecturers, anybody basically who's senior to me, I'm always kind of very careful about what I like speak to them about kind of outside life. So like my supervisor will volunteer information about her family, and like I'll ask how her family are, but I try not to like delve too deeply, because I think, you know, at the end of the day, like she has a private life, like I have a private life, and I think like that's with her, and like I feel comfortable talking about it with her. But like, for example, maybe I don't know, another lecturer who's maybe my like friend's PI, I wouldn't even like ask them like how their wife is or how their like children are, unless they like volunteered that information. So I feel like unless that this person had like that sort of relationship with Jill where they could like walk up to her and be like, so how's family life, you know, like,
yeah,
unless you have that sort of relationship, I guess it's going to be very, very difficult to bounce in and kind of have that conversation. I don't know, it's a hard one. I feel like I read that and my heart just sank, because I feel like it probably does happen so often, and it won't just be in science, like it'll happen in all professions.
I don't think I would have got involved.
I think it's because it's got that, like, if it was just like among like a friend of a friend or something outside of work, I think, like, yeah. Jodie says, you probably would, I feel like you would sort of say something, but because it's like it's in your work bubble,
yeah,
you don't, especially as a PhD student, you don't know how that's going to fire back on you.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I have to be honest, I don't think I would say anything, but equally I don't think I would say anything to anybody else, because you don't know who you can trust. And I think if you if you said that to another PhD student, like, you don't know, is it going to get back, and then is it going to like seem like you're spreading rumors about your boss? It's still a very like precarious situation to find yourself in, and to be honest, like, I feel quite sorry for this student. Equally, I've just thought of this, did Bob see them?
Well, this is what I was thinking. Yeah. I'd like to be the kind of person that had the balls to go up to Bob and go, oh, hi, good to see you. How are you? You know, oh, who's this? You know, I'm Jodie. I work in his lab. You know, oh, where's Jill tonight? You know, oh, I'd love to be one of those people that would just kind of, you know, act normally.
Yeah. Or not even that, just like sat across the room with your glass of wine, just like, I see you.
Or like Poirot.
I would love to know what they did for the rest of that evening. Like, were they just like hiding behind plants or something? Or
yeah, well, they said they were waiting for the bill. So I'm thinking, like, once that came, they probably just scarfed. I think I would be, I don't think I would have the balls to like walk up and be like, hi. I think I would be like, head to the ground, walk out, like, do not speak to me, do not acknowledge my existence, I'm just getting out of here. Like, that's kind of where I would be in that situation. I would just be dying inside, to be honest.
I think that if Bob had seen me and we'd made eye contact across the room, then I would call over the waiter and I would say, this dinner's on Bob.
Yes, you've got to leverage that situation.
Look, if I'm going to feel awkward about this, and if I'm clearly not going to do anything about it, I'm at least going to benefit from it.
Yes.
I stand for this energy.
Yeah. I don't know what's got into me tonight. I'm like, I'm ruthless.
That's amazing. I love it, honestly. Oh, that's great. So I think we're all kind of in agreement then, like, we wouldn't say anything.
Yeah,
poor Jill though.
Yeah, well, we don't know, maybe she was cool with it.
True, maybe. We'll never know, alas. That's the problem with these confessions. I never get any follow-up. I'm like, tell me what happened next.
Oh, I'd love it if it's like at the end of 24 hours in police custody, where they're then like they do the write-in where they're like, you know, he spent 2 years in prison.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. He's still with his wife. Whatever.
Shortly after
it would be
recording.
Nice to have an update on these confessions, because I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I feel so responsible. Oh, but no, so those are the two confessions that I picked out for this recording. I purposely only picked the two because I thought, you know, there's the two of you here, like, I wanted to hear your confessions as well. And then I thought those two are probably going to be quite meaty ones that we can get into. So I hope that you don't mind that we only had the two this week, but I thought that those were two pretty good ones.
They were, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Amazing. So just before we end the podcast then, thank you both so much for joining me. Do you want to sort of tell people, I know you've already kind of covered this, but tell people like where they can find you, or if there's anywhere that like you want to direct them? Obviously, you know, you can talk about your own podcast.
Oh yeah, our podcast, yeah.
that thing we do.
Okay, yeah, so if you're just meeting us for the first time, Jodie and I also do a podcast called The Academinist, which Maria has also been a guest on.
Yeah,
we had a great chat with Maria, definitely worth listening to. But we chat to women, and yeah, mainly women in STEM, about inequality and feminism in STEM. We talk about lots of things and try and have a bit of fun whilst doing it. So yeah, if that sounds like your jam, you can listen to our podcast anywhere where you can find podcasts. We're basically everywhere. And we're on social media at The Academinist on Instagram and Twitter. Jodie's nodding like, yes, nailing it. I always mess this up in our own podcast.
I was sort of looking at you like, social media, mention.
Like, we practiced. yeah, so you can go and check out some of our episodes, and yeah, we're always looking for new guests as well. Yeah, I think that's basically it for our podcast.
Yeah, and Jodie and Rebecca's podcast, genuinely, like, I know I've been a guest, so I am a bit biased, but I really love listening to it. I feel like you have such a vast array of different types of guests from kind of different academic backgrounds and covering, you know, different topics. And it's just, it's a really interesting, and I really love, I think, especially as like a woman in STEM, like, it's really nice to hear about other successful women in STEM, because as you say, like, you don't just talk to like PhD students like me, like, you do talk to some PIs and like people who are like tops of their field. And you know, if you don't already listen to it, I would genuinely like, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, like I would genuinely really recommend everybody listening to check it out because it is a very good listen. And Jordy, you have obviously already mentioned that you are pretty prominent on social media. Do you want to do a quick plug for your bits and bobs?
So I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, but mostly Instagram, at Not Brain Science. And I post mostly kind of informative grad school advice posts, but also some funny reels. And I advocate for a lot for women and non-binary people in STEM. So if that's something that you care about, then I'd like to see you there. I also do giveaways. And I gave away one of Maria's sketch notepads recently. Yes. So if you like free science stuff, then you might also want to follow me for that.
That's a very good plug. Again, like I said with the podcast, definitely make sure you check out Jodie's Instagram. I'll put all of the links to your podcast and like Instagrams and everything in the description for the podcast. But I would definitely recommend checking it out. Like, you know, you're both, I mean, I was so excited. I was saying earlier, I was so excited to have you both on and speak to you because I had so much fun recording our podcast episode for your podcast. And I just knew that like you'd be two like really good people to have on, have a bit of a laugh with. And I really have genuinely really enjoyed speaking to you both. So thank you so much for agreeing to come on. And I hope I haven't mortified you too much.
Thanks for having us. I hope we've been on our best behavior.
We have, definitely. I hope there's no repercussions from things that you've either broken or
I feel like I've come out of this like I would blame everything on students. Yeah. And also
I'd walk up to that PI.
Yeah.
I will be adopting a false name after this.
It's been so nice knowing you both. Yeah. Oh, but no, thanks, girls, so much. I've really, really enjoyed having you on.
No, thank you.
Thanks.
So there you have it. There is the episode with the lovely girls from The Academinist. Oh, I had so much fun recording that episode. I feel like I just laughed from start to finish and honestly, it's really cheered up my week. I feel like I'm going into tomorrow in a much better mood and granted with a lot of things on my mind about, you know, making mistakes in the lab and mixing up fly vials, but also what I would do if I found out that one of my supervisors was cheating. definitely some food for thought there, and I really enjoyed delving into that with the girls. As I said, they were both hilarious and such a pleasure to record with, so thank you again if you were listening to this, Rebecca and Jordy. Like they mentioned, you can check out their podcast, The Academinist, on most of your podcast streaming services, and you can find their podcast account on Instagram. I'll include the links below, but it's at The Academinist. You can find Jordy on Instagram at Not Brain Science, and I think that's the same for her Twitter, but I'll double check that and put that in the description box as well. And you can find Rebecca at Twitter at r_Casterton, which I will also put in the description box as well. So yeah, that's the episode all done and dusted. I really hope that you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed recording it. Honestly, it was a really great episode to sit down and record, and also, to be honest, to go back through and edit. I've just been sat here the entire time just howling with laughter. So yeah, I think that was a pretty good one and I'm really happy with it. If you would like to feature on the podcast, I would love it to have you on as my guest. Please feel free to message me or follow me. I am on Instagram at abioblog is my science account, and you can find the podcast account at flyinthelab. You can also email me at flyinthelab@gmail.com. And yeah, we'll definitely get something in the diaries if you fancy jumping on at the podcast. If not, if there's something that is burning deep inside that you would like to confess anonymously, of course, you can get in touch with me by all of those aforementioned methods as well, and we can definitely, you know, get that read out, because I can guarantee you probably won't be the first person to have gone through that situation. And at the end of the day, what are we here for if not to laugh at all of the science struggles that we have along the way? So thank you again for listening to this episode. I really hope that you've enjoyed it, and I'll catch you in 2 weeks' time. Speak to you later. Bye.